In this culture, we are not taught to care for our bodies. We're taught to criticize our bodies. We're taught to judge our bodies against a standard of beauty that does not exist and never did exist. We are taught to judge other people's bodies by a standard of beauty that does not exist and never did exist. And we often judge people based upon that. But I'm here to tell you that according to Scripture, every body is holy. It doesn't matter what age, it doesn't matter what size, it doesn't matter what color, it doesn't matter what shape. Every body is holy because it is a gift from God and has stamped on it the image of God. We as Christians are watermarked at baptism with that image to whom we belong, right? But you won't hear that out in the world. You just hear that here in church, if you hear it at all. Because we are not taught to care for and respect our bodies as gifts of God. We are not often taught to care for and respect other bodies as gifts of God. Now, in preschool, of course, we are taught you don't hit, you don't bite, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes as we grow older, we sometimes lose the sense that, you know, touching without permission is not necessarily a good thing. Touching without permission is never a good thing unless it's invited or asked for. And so not just hitting or biting, but touching, which can be a very wholesome and wonderful and warm and comforting thing, can also be a very dangerous and threatening thing for some people. Now, I'm a hugger. You probably know that about me already. I hug men, women, children, whoever will let me hug them and wants a hug. That's great, okay? And I don't always ask, and I probably should. But I do try to read nonverbal signs, and if someone does not indicate to me that they want to be hugged, I'll shake their hand. Or I'll nod my head and greet them with words. Occasionally, however, I will misread that. And I'll hug somebody who stiffens as I do, and I know that was a mistake. And I don't ever do it again. Because for some people, that kind of intimacy of touch is very threatening, especially people who have been abused physically or sexually. It is very threatening. And that is certainly not my intent when I hug people. If it is not a comforting and caring action, I don't want to do it. But we're not always taught, especially I think guys are not always taught, that those boundaries are extremely, extremely important. I remember 27 years ago, I know that timing because Sarah, our daughter, our older daughter, had not yet been born. I'd been invited to preach for the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference. I don't remember the text. I don't even remember much about the sermon. But I do remember a question I asked that formed in my mind as we were getting ready to have our first child. And that question was, do I have to be afraid for my daughter, now daughters, because of what you've taught your sons or allowed the culture to teach them? Conversely, if Sarah had turned out to be a boy, do you have to be afraid for your daughters because of what I taught my son or allowed the culture to teach my son about how we interact with other people's bodies? Because you see, a body is a gift from God. It bears the stamp and image of God. And we do not treat that lightly. Now, we have the perfect example, and you're going to know who it is. It's Jesus, of course. Whenever Jesus interacts with someone in that kind of intimacy, it's either to heal them or to feed them. That's how Jesus interacts intimately with other people. When he touches them, that touch is a healing touch. Even when they touch him, and often that's without permission. And he doesn't reject them, but that is a healing touch. He even deflects the idea often that he was responsible. Your faith has made you well, he says. But we know that it would not have happened had it not been for that intimate encounter with that individual. When Jesus shares a meal, the intimacy of a meal, breaking bread, dipping it in the same bowl as others, he shares that, of course, at the Last Supper with the person who has already betrayed him, with the person who would deny knowing him and all the rest of those around the table who would desert him. And yet, in intimacy, he shares with each one of them. And what does he say to even deepen the intimacy? This is my body that you're consuming, that you're touching. This is my blood that you are consuming, that you're breaking, you're drinking. He recognizes the intimacy of that moment by saying, it's not just maybe touching fingers accidentally as we pass bread. We are literally sharing bodily. Jesus was concerned about bodies and how we treat other people's bodies and our own. Not just about souls. Somewhere the church got the wrong-headed idea that God was only concerned about souls. Well, why did God give us these beautiful, miraculous, wonderful vehicles to walk around in if God was only concerned about souls? You do know you're beautiful, don't you? Every single one of you. Because God is an artist, and God crafted you the way you are. And you are beautiful. I think sometimes we forget that, and it's when we forget our own beauty, and when we forget that that beauty extends to every other person on the planet, that we sometimes misuse it, that we sometimes go against our own best knowledge in terms of how we treat ourselves, in terms of how we treat others. In the story today, Jesus and his disciples go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, or Lake Tiberias, whatever you want to call it. The other side is the Gentile side. It's where the Decapolis is. It's where the Gentile cities happen to be. So it's possible that among those 5,000 people gathered, there were Gentiles. You notice Jesus never asks. He doesn't say, okay, let's feed the Jews who are here. Let's feed those who are real followers of mine and we're not going to. No, he feeds them all. And it's very likely that there were folks who would have been considered foreigners, invaders, perhaps even enemies on the other side. But when it comes time to eat, and this story is told in all four Gospels, except in John, it is told very differently. You won't find a last story supper in John, a Lord's Supper. You will find foot washing. But this is as close as you get to a story of Jesus establishing the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper. Because in this story, unlike the other narratives about the feeding of the 5,000, it's Jesus who serves the crowd. He doesn't delegate it. He doesn't say to them, okay, you feed them. He says, what do we have? And there is a child who has 5 loaves and 2 fish, or as Clarence Durden put it in the Cotton Patch version, 5 boxes of crackers and 2 cans of sardines. And it's Jesus who takes it and breaks the bread and hands it in that same kind of intimacy to each and every person there, including them all. I was reminded yesterday as we sat down to eat, first as we gathered in the morning at the Habitat Building, and then as we sat down to eat, There were Christians of a variety of flavors there. There were Muslims, there were Hindus, there were Jewish folk, and we were all there together. There were folks who had nothing to do with religion except they thought this building a house for somebody was a good idea. We were all included there. Just like the 5,000 and the crowd, my guess is we were about as diverse yesterday as they were, if not as numerous. And when we sat down to eat, we began to make new friends. We began to learn about what life was like in Somalia or Kenya. We began to learn about what life was like for people who were very different from ourselves in the breaking of bread. A Sunday school class had brought us lunch. And in the breaking of the bread, we learned that. I'm convinced that every single meal holds the potential of being a Eucharistic celebration. It holds the potential of being the Lord's Supper. Because whenever people who were estranged come together and are brought together in love, Christ is present. Whenever people who are defined as enemies come together and find out that they're friends, Christ is present. Whenever people who might simply not know about each other come together and learn the common struggles and concerns that they share with those who might be very different, Christ is present. Any meal, that meal yesterday was a Eucharistic meal, even though we didn't say the official prayers, even though you would not have recognized it as such, we come here and we practice taking part in a holy meal so we can go out there and recognize it when we see it. The prayers are not magic. It is the presence of Christ that is the defining aspect of any Eucharistic meal. Need to tell you a story. A story about a young man named Derek Black. If you want to read about it, it was published in the Washington Post this past week in much greater detail than I can share with you. Derek Black's father, Don, was one of the leaders of the Ku Klux Klan. He burned crosses. He plotted violent revolts. He said awful, awful things about people of different races, of different nationalities. And then after a while, he decided that might not be the best way to approach his white nationalism. So he decided not to use those awful racial epithets, but what we now call dog whistles, saying the same thing with different words, like all immigrants are rapists, and robbers, and murderers, that those people are coming here as intruders and they all need to be deported. After he got out of prison, he started a website called Stormfront. And Stormfront dissociated itself from the Klan, but keeping those same principles, was a white nationalist and still is a white nationalist website. He decided that the best way to infiltrate the culture was not to use words that were traditionally associated with racism, but to use words that said the same thing in a very different way, in a more acceptable way. He was great friends with David Duke, and he and David Duke decided that their plan was to infiltrate and take over a major political party in the United States. I'll leave it up to you to decide whether or not they were successful. Derek Black was Don Black's son, still is. Derek was raised to be the great white hope of the Black family. He was raised to be the upcoming leader of a new generation of white nationalists who would continue to work for the removal of all people of color from North America, who would continue to support policies that favored white people over others by using terms like white genocide and things like that. From early on, he was very active. Derek had a podcast. He had a blog. He did a radio program. He was the up-and-coming hope, even in his teen years. He was good enough at this. He was good enough at forming racist, exclusive language in a way that was acceptable to a great number of people, that he actually won a local office in a town in Florida when he was still in community college. And then, for his last 2 years of college, he decided to go to New College, one of the most liberal schools in the country. He kind of kept his white nationalism under wraps. He didn't promote it. He would sneak away to call in his radio broadcasts on his father's station. He was there for a semester and then went to Germany for the next semester for a year abroad to study with white nationalists in Germany, with neo-Nazis. We all know where that took us, don't we? While he was there, a student at New College who was researching white nationalist groups discovered who he was and ratted him out. Put a post on the school website describing who he was, giving links to what he had written, and by the time he got back, he was almost afraid to come to campus. His views would be anathema there. And sure enough, when he arrived on campus, there were people who wouldn't speak to him. There were people who treated him rudely. There were people who said ugly things. There were people who posted ugly things. There were also some folks who said, well, maybe we should just include him in our group. There was one guy who had lived down the hall from him that first semester. His name was Matthew Stevenson, the only Orthodox Jew on the New College campus. Matthew decided that what he was going to do when he arrived was that he was going to invite people to his Friday evening Shabbat meals. As an Orthodox Jew, he was required to celebrate those, and so he started inviting his friends, his Hindu friends, his Muslim friends, his Christian friends, his atheist friends. Anybody who would come was welcome at the Shabbat meal. So when Derek came back, Matthew thought, well, why don't I invite him? Now, this is the guy who said the Jews were not white and needed to be deported, okay? He said, why don't I invite him? So he did. And that first Shabbat meal that Derek Black attended was not very well attended by most of the other folks who had been used to coming there. But after a while, they began to return. And Matthew didn't really lecture Derek. He just let him experience the intimacy of table fellowship, of breaking bread with those who were different from him, an experience he had literally never had before. He would say the prayer for the breaking of the bread, the same prayer Jesus would have used. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, hamotzi lechem min haaretz. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, creator of the universe, who brings forth bread from the earth. And he would welcome this man who ostensibly hated him and wanted him deported. Over time, Derek's views began to change. He saw human beings where before he had seen ideological constructs of evil or intrusion. He began to become friends with those very people that before he had wanted to deport. He began to see, dare I say, children of God, other embodied presences of the divine there. And his attitudes began to shift. He would find excuses not to call in for his radio show. He would find excuses, busyness, classes, tests, papers, not to write his blog. He took classes in medieval history and religion and discovered that what we think of as whiteness is a social construct, an umbrella over a number of many and various groups of people from Northern and Southern Europe, that there is no such thing as being white. And it exploded his world because it had all been based upon the differentiation between white and everybody else. Finally, his friends asked him to write a response to all of those responses he had received when he was outed, and he did. And he talked about the changes that had come on in his life. And his father got in touch with him as soon as it hit the internet and says, "You've been hacked." And he had to say, "No, Dad, I haven't been hacked. I've been changed." This Orthodox Jew invited me to Shabbat meals with Hindus and Muslims and other Christians who don't believe the way I do. And it has changed my life. When he went to his father's birthday, he was unwelcome. They would not let him in. His grandmother would not let him in the house to celebrate his father's birthday. His father was forced to leave the house if he was going to talk to his son. So Don, to his credit, left the house so he could talk to Derek. It's interesting that while Matthew could welcome someone who literally hated him for his race, his own family, because he no longer shared their ideological stands, rejected him. Don talked to his son, but he couldn't talk him back into the white nationalist mindset. Derek started taking classes in Arabic. Derek started taking classes in the study of Islam, things he would never have dreamed of before, all because of the intimacy of someone feeding him, someone in the intimacy of a meal, breaking bread and offering it to him, respecting him bodily and physically in that way. I believe that was Eucharist. I believe that anywhere the life-giving and transforming presence of Christ is, people are changed. And they are not changed to be more exclusive. They are not changed to be more hateful. They are not changed to be more harsh and ugly to people who are different, but they are changed to see people as gifts of God and themselves as gifts of God. We come here to practice so we can see that in the world. These bodies are gifts. You are all beautiful, and so are those people you encounter. And if you enter into that wholesome touch and intimacy that is healing and feeding to those around you, there is absolutely no telling what God can do with that. Thanks be to God.